You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast is brought to you by Casper Mattresses. Go to Casper.com/Gilbert for $50 toward any mattress. This is Gilbert Gottfried, and this is Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast with my co-host Frank Santopadre. Our first year anniversary party continues with part two of our marathon interview conducted at Nutmeg Post with our guest Craig Bierico, Drew Friedman, Tom Leopold, Bill Persky, and Paul Schaefer. This episode has it all. Acromegaly, the Brooklyn Dodgers, and Russell Crowe as Mo Howard? Don't miss it. Before I forget, we have a new sponsor.
Who is that, Gil?
This is Casper Mattresses.
Oh, yes.
They got in touch with me. And they said, we want to send you a mattress.
Yeah.
And then I got in touch with you.
That was very kind of you.
Yeah.
I should say that Gilbert offered me the mattress, which was very, very kind. And I hear great things about these mattresses. I just bought a mattress.
Yeah.
A couple of months ago, which is a change for me because...
I wanted you to have the mattress because up until then... You were sleeping on subway gratings.
Yes,
and
yes.
Using newspapers for blankets.
Yes, I was masking taping placemats together.
And
like Lucy in the stone pillow. I was sleeping on a grate.
But I've been sleeping on it, and it does make a difference.
Well, because it's a combination of premium latex foam and memory foam, which is kind of a hybrid. It's a different kind of mattress. It's supposed to be incredibly comfortable.
Yeah, it feels totally different, and... And it's not, then dealing with them isn't like when you go into these stores.
Oh, mattress
where
salesman.
It's become like going to a car lot.
Yeah, I dread it.
Where they you gotta like try to negotiate with them, and they do that thing of like, same with car lots. They'll go, oh, I gotta go discuss that with my boss and see if we can give you a deal on
this
that.
Is a much easier way to get a mattress.
Yeah.
And if you can sleep on it with all the terrible things you've done in your life on your conscience, it must be a very comfortable mattress. You want to read that call to action?
Yes. And it's, you could get, for $500, you get a twin-size mattress, and $950 for a king-size mattress. Comparing that to industry averages... That's an outstanding price point.
It is, actually. And now I'm sorry I gave you the mattress.
Yes. You see, I've always said you're an idiot.
What about that last part there?
So get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/Gilbert and using Gilbert. That's C-A-S-P-E-R. .com/Gilbert for your savings.
We were so
talking about lead-ins. I spoke at a women's group of the Temple Emmanuel last week. I was invited for their year-end thing. And the thing, I walked in and really it was like, this is terrible to say, but it's like I was there the day after they liberated Auschwitz to tell everybody how they were going to be treated. I mean,
yeah,
it was the worst face. I mean, it was just, and I'm now going to be the entertainment. And they finally, after a meeting, an election of officers, it's now like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they say, and our guest speaker today is Bill Persky. But first, let's rise for a moment for those of our sisters who are not with us any longer. That's the intro.
That's, your, yeah.
Wow. That's almost as good as the priest who introduced you, the Monsignor, when you did you did your show down in...
Right, exactly. But it's,
may I lead into my story about that? When I was a child, I was a child of about 12 years old, up in my hometown, Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. Not much entertainment up there, a town of 100,000. Not a bad size, but totally isolated and freezing cold on the North Shore of Lake Superior. But there, one year there was an Israeli bond drive. Actually, every year there was, you know. And that, the bond drive was a rabbi and a celebrity going all across Canada selling Israeli bonds. Having evenings at the shul, where the bonds would be sold. People would pledge right there after the entertainment. Well, this year, and I'm 12 years old, the entertainment is Ricky Lane and Velvel.
Lucky you.
Velvel.
And this is a, for those readers, listeners, it's a Catskills act from back in the day, the 60s, a ventriloquist act. Velvel is a dummy, a Yiddish dummy with a Yiddish accent.
I forgot he had a Yiddish accent.
Somehow, Sullivan loved this act.
Yeah.
I guess he thought that it appealed to the Jewish audience. It would bring in the Jewish audience for him. And they were on so many times that they were huge.
Yeah.
So huge that when it was announced that the Israeli bond drive in the evening of in June, I think, was going to include Ricky Lane and Velvel, it had to be opened up to the Goyim as well. It wasn't going to be just... Because it was act was on the Sullivan Show, and they were coming to Thunder Bay, Ontario. The mayor was going to come, and all, you know, city dignitaries, everybody was going to show up. Ricky Lane and Velvel was a huge sellout. Now, it's an Orthodox synagogue. Now, this means there are very strict rules for having an evening like this. The food has to be completely kosher. And in the case of this, it's got to be brought in from Winnipeg, Manitoba, because there's no kosher butchers or anything in this town. So it's all kosher. And my parents, God love them, they're no longer with us. And this is, you know, I thank them every day for encouraging me to live my life. And it's turned out so well and everything. They had assimilated quite well, you know. I don't know why there were any Jews up there in Thunder Bay, but this, my parents, second generation or something, you know, already very goyish in their ways and very well dressed and cosmopolitan. And now their goyish friends are going to be coming to the shul to see Ricky Lane and Velvel, and it's going to be kosher and whatever it is with the dishes and everything. And they're starting to worry. And I'm 12 years old, seeping, getting all of this. They're worrying about, you know, it can be embarrassing a little bit for the Goyim to come to see Ricky Lane and Velvel. And, you know, it's got to be kosher. And everything is, I'm aware of this exquisite tension. And we go to see the show. Now, there's a dinner first. It's all kosher. And the mayor, I think, makes a speech and welcomes Ricky Lane and Velvel. And, of course, the rabbi from wherever. And he gets up to speak first. The rabbi speaks about Israel and how it's been a tough year and you really need it. And as Jews, you've got to reach deep into your pockets. And he's got a heavy, heavy Yiddish accent. And buy Israeli bonds. What do I see? Who do I see? And I don't know. Maybe it was a tough year in Thunder Bay for the Jews, but nobody raised their hands. Well, this rabbi goes into a rant and a tantrum, and it's half Yiddish and half English, and my parents' heads just drop like this because it's the funniest thing and the most embarrassing thing. And you people, and you should rot in the tavern. Ah, I'm not afraid. And now, Ricky Lane and Velvet. Well, I can't
great
tell you. I remember so clearly the image of Ricky Lane down on the ground with the dummy, you know, sticking his hand in the dummy and getting ready. And he's saying, wow, Rabbi, that's like, wow. I don't know. Try to do comedy, you know. Comedy after that, Rabbi. And he says, but don't worry. I'm sure that we'll talk to the people after, Rabbi, and we'll make sure that there's a better outcome for you. And then he just goes into his act. Wow. And it's just one of those life-changing things.
But how did the act? How did he fare? Like, how did he do? Did he win them back?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, the people were dying to see him.
Well,
because
yeah.
he'd been
Jewish,
on Sullivan.
So that was
what was that?
Velvo was Jewish. So
Velvo was Jewish. Yeah. Exactly.
Knucklehead then, hated Jews.
Everything
which is
was
ironic.
Kosher.
Yeah.
Jolson would have left
Jolson
the building.
Didn't need a mic or a Jew.
No,
he didn't need.
A mic.
I know some. I thought of some other Jew haters from Hollywood.
Oh, let's talk about the Jew haters.
Yeah.
All right. Well, of course, Ward Bond.
Ward Bond.
He was the best Jew hater there.
He hated Jews and Chinese waiters. Hated.
What did he do on Sunday night?
He would garrote. He would Christmas. And Robert Mitchum, sadly. There's an Esquire interview with him where he's just ranting about the Jews.
That makes sense.
He's our man.
Sometimes it hurts. You heard that.
I heard Robert Mitchum said in some interview about something about the Holocaust that it killed
alleged.
6 million
He goes,
Jews.
Alleged.
And he goes, allegedly.
Right.
Ah.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So
what's
what do you think of him now? We still love him. But
Heaven knows Mr. Allison my ass. I mean...
What I love about Paul's story is that the Jews were embarrassed that the Goyim would see the rabbi going,
Like
they hadn't seen Jews before in the town.
Well, it was, we don't want Jews to appear.
You know, Paul is such a great musician. He doesn't have to be this good at all this other stuff,
too. He's good at everything,
this guy. Really? I mean, you are a great storyteller.
That's so nice. Well, that's one of my best stories.
God,
it left an indelible mark.
Yes.
And then there was a little moment where he was signing autographs, and I was lined up with my little thing and gave it to him. He didn't speak at all. He just, his eyes got, he widened his eyes as he looked at me. And it just freaked me out, and I left without speaking at all. That was Ricky Lane and Velvo, yeah.
Do you have a Velvo doll? No. Did they make dolls out of
it? I think Tom
Leopold gave me his Lester doll last year.
Yeah.
It was like one of the most touching things.
Yeah, I've told the story somewhere, and Ricky Lane's daughter contacted me. And
you told you to stop telling it? Or
no, just
That's sweet.
She appreciated it. She
That's
loved
sweet.
It.
Do you think she owns the doll?
She has, somewhere in that family is the doll. I did my best trying to, ingratiate myself to her that brief period of time and become friends. And what about the doll? Is there another Velvel? Is there a spare Velvel or anything?
I'm building up a Jewish comedy museum, a Jewseum. And I would love to have that Velvel.
Now, who had Farfel the dog? Was that him too?
No.
That was Soupy, wasn't it?
Oh, that was David.
Danny O'Day?
Danny O'Day.
Danny O'Day and Farfel.
Danny O'Day and Farfel.
And Farfel, the dog puppet.
Yeah. For Nestle.
Weren't they the ones that they also did
Farfel.
I only know that from a Drew Friedman book.
And then
Farfel's a Jewish food.
Craig Bierko, guest number 8 on the call bird. I have a question that's Jew related and story related.
Combination.
And I've always wondered this. It's a legendary story. Maybe you're aware of it, maybe you're not. It's an SNL legend story. A big Michael O'Donoghue fan and all the lore and there was a story of a sketch that he always wanted to get from the very beginning on the air. Do you know which one I'm talking
about? The Nazi sketch.
Yeah.
I was in it. He got it on the air.
You were in it?
And I was in it playing the piano. We went out with, you know, a big Tomorrow Belongs to Me or something. It ended with, like, just like the scene in Cabaret.
Was this the two guys on the bench? Wasn't there one?
I can't remember the what was in the story, but it was just a little slice of Nazi life. in a, you know, a bar.
Yeah.
With and everyone, it ends with a sing-song. I don't know. Maybe there was some spy activity. He was very concerned with all the details, getting the costumes exactly right, the uniforms exactly right, and the way they held the cigarettes and everything. And he was very obsessed.
With I
think he was in it too.
Wasn't there a Fred Silverman's bunker sketch?
Oh, he did that at the end. Yeah. Yes,
the sketch that I heard about was there were two old men on a bench.
Yeah,
and one looks up, and the other looks up, and he's got the calico of hair over, and he's got the little Nazi Hitler mustache, a gray mustache. And the Jewish, because he's obviously a Jewish guy, looks over at him and goes, are you? And he goes, yeah, that's me. Like, this isn't ringing any bells.
Nah, no.
I feel funny telling it. Huh? Maybe I'm dreaming it. Maybe I dreamt it.
Hey, can we, I've heard this story a million variations. Has nothing to do with the Jews.
No.
But it is one of these great stories of, you may have heard it, Paul.
Yeah.
Whitney Houston, Jodie Foster.
Did you just start talking in the middle of my story?
Yeah. Yes. Fuck you. I'm
guest number fucking eight. Okay. Is that what happens?
Come on, fellas. Come on now.
I don't want to finish the fucking. I'll finish it.
I'll finish it on somebody else's
podcast.
Yeah. Was there a story?
There was one.
Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
Was there a story?
What kind of ass burger, what the fuck was that? I literally was in the middle. I was like, I wasn't even in the middle of a sentence. I was in the middle of a word. I was like, it was. And
that's
you're like,
great.
I have a... Didn't Dorian... Are you kidding? Are you kidding?
Whitney Houston. You had a story?
It's Greg.
Yeah.
By the way, my name is Greg.
Okay.
No.
Greg T. Nelson.
No, that was Greg T. Nelson. No. So the one guy's obviously Hitler, and the other guy's a Jew. And whatever you would want a Jew to say to Hitler, he says so beautifully. He goes, how could you possibly justify all the horror and all that? And he says, and he goes on this 10-minute speech, and then Hitler leans over and whispers into his ear, and the Jew goes, "My mistake. I apologize."
Oh my goodness!
Listen, I didn't think of it. I didn't even think of that. And that was apparently the sketch.
No.
And maybe because it played pretty much like it just played in this room.
Yeah, I certainly don't remember.
But it also.
This is
also,
why I didn't want you
no
to
one,
end the story.
No one could play a joke through a backdraft like you just created.
All right.
That was like
man drove a nuclear submarine into my delivery.
Had I not interrupted, that would have killed
me. No, that's like the night that it was on, they interrupted in the middle to announce that 47,000 people were killed in a war, and then they came back to the... That's what you just put up with.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why he flunked out of host school.
By the
What's
way,
host school?
Host school.
Yes. Host school, I love it.
He just flunked right the hell out of
What's the Hitler fact, Tommy?
Interesting Hitler fact. Do you know why Hitler didn't drink?
Yeah.
Why?
Why?
Mean drunk.
Ah.
Mean shit. Like two personalities, you know? Two fucking
mean drunk. He was a mean drunk.
Couldn't handle it.
Couldn't handle the
most.
All right, Jodie Foster is circling.
Well, wait. I heard that on the History Channel.
Oh, well.
They said that Hitler, his personal physician, used to give him 3 pills a day, one after each meal, to control his flatulence. This is what they said.
He was worried about grossing people out.
Hitler's
about killing all
Hitler's
the Jews.
Farts. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't want to be improper.
I don't want to.
By the way, kill another 80 fucking million.
That's right. I don't want.
So yes, this story about Jodie Foster, Whitney Houston, and I always forget her name, one from. The Amish people and...
Kelly McGillis.
Oh, gee.
According to the story...
I know where this is going.
Okay, Bill.
I can feel it.
Kelly McGillis. How do you know where it's going?
I heard it like a million variations.
I'm sure there were a million variations.
But that Kelly McGillis was going out with Whitney Houston, And then Kelly McGillis had an affair with Jodie Foster. And then Whitney Houston beat up Kelly McGillis. And she was there.
Oh,
with
I remember reading about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Where in
please.
God's name would you read about that? I'm serious.
Variety.
In a stall in a men's room? I mean,
Red Bull.
Well, there too.
I got to say, this is one hell of an interesting erection I've got.
I don't know what to do with this.
Right?
I don't know how to express this.
What made you hard? The fact that she beat them or they were lesbians?
I think it might have been when Gilbert interrupted me.
Interesting.
Is when it started. There was a tingle.
No, I'm sorry he let you go back to the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually asked Tom Leopold a question the other day. I can bring it up again. It was about Ernest Borgnine and Ethel Merman when they were married.
There goes the hard on.
Sorry, Craig.
Like a Lender's bagel.
I emailed Tom. I think you were on jury duty during it, but I emailed you. I said, "Do you think Ernest Borgnine ate Ethel Merman?" And what was your response?
With a Bordeaux, I think.
No, yeah. I forget, what did I say?
Fine Bordeaux.
Something about back fine hair. Back hair.
Oh. It's the only way she could stand his back hair. I don't know.
You know, at the writers at the Writers Guild dinner, which used to be a big thing in LA, they would do this thing with film clips, and there was this thing of dwarfs wrestling, and they'd always do a story meeting at the William Morris Agency, and then there was another thing that they had of two trains just barreling in and up in the air, and they used that. They said, and the big romantic news of the year is Ethel Merman and Ernest Borgnine.
Well, you know, they always said, why, you know, they asked Ethel why she, you know, divorced Ernie. He says, she goes, well, how'd you like to hear, oh no, why Ernie divorced her? He goes, well, how'd you like to hear, hey Ernie, every morning?
Oh my God.
It's probably apocryphal.
And it was just an echo.
I heard that the screaming on their wedding night, they could hear it miles away. Yeah. Like, Stuart
boys, people in the hotel.
Yeah. Stuart Whitman was in Bel Air, over a mile away. He says he could hear the screaming, like banshee screams that night.
He
never got over it.
Yeah. And they say that the sweat the two raised can still be seen floating over.
Well, Tom, they had to build a viaduct. They had to build
a lake in Vegas.
When I asked you about Ernie eating Ethel, you said, well, he had more hair between his teeth than he had on his back then.
Oh, yes.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans.
That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Tommy, do you have a story about...
I like it. Something I liked it.
Do you have a story about Joyce Brothers' husband?
Oh, big story. Well, Paul knows this story.
Whose husband?
Dr. Joyce Brothers.
Dr. Joyce Brothers was also a doctor.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Joyce Brothers.
By the way, would this be a good name for a black soul, an old soul, black blues musician?
African-American.
Yeah. Washington, Dr. Joyce Brothers Jefferson. No, I guess not. Okay. What was the question?
Joy. Something about you and Harry in Club Paradise?
Well, Harry Shearer and I were sent down by a studio to write the movie Club Paradise. Of course, the movie was completely rewritten after we got back, but we spent a week in Haiti, me and Harry Shearer. Harry, of course, Paul knows, he comes with huge metal boxes. I said, what's that? He goes, my espresso machine. So he brings, I don't know, that's apropos of nothing. I just wanted to paint a picture for you guys. Anyway, we get down there, and the whole time, nobody wants to get near us, you know. And by the end of it, everyone's sitting with us, and we're stickling. But anyway, we on the plane back, we both got just a projectile diarrhea.
Yeah. Shit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Bring it
back,
full
circle. Back to the theme.
So, back to the theme.
Wait a minute. I need to picture that.
You know, that kind of
it had nowhere to go.
Yeah, well,
it
had one hit. No, you'll love it. It has a cute button at the end.
No, I didn't mean the story. I meant.
Oh, then I don't know.
There's nowhere for it to go.
So,
there's a cute button at the end.
Yeah.
I got to draw that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that'd be good. Yeah. My doctor says, Harry was from LA, so my doctor says, you got to go get your stool tested. Harry Shearer and I have to, and it turns out the stool doctor was Dr. Joyce Brothers' husband.
Oh,
wow. Yeah. He specialized in shit. I don't know what. What did he take that in school or something? What are you in for? Cardiac
surgery.
So did
she. Yeah.
That was his obsession.
I really want to get down to the bottom of shit. Try to cure shit or something. I don't know what he wants.
Cure
anyway,
shit.
Yeah. So we go there.
Was that like a proctologist or something different? Like.
No, the weird thing was, it was an office, a doctor's office,
it's
unlike anything
lab.
I'd ever seen.
Shit lab.
It was a shit lab. Schlip lab terrier. No, it was a shit lab. And there were all these doors.
Stalls.
Like stalls, but doors
stools.
Like phone booths with doors on them.
Yeah.
That they give you like a huge Slurpee cup, you know, like the big gulp, you know. You take it and they give you something to make. And meanwhile, they give everybody, this place was packed. Everybody was there to take a shit. And they give you this stuff to drink. They give you this stuff to drink, and everybody's just waiting, like down on starting blocks, to go into the individual toilets. And I don't have an ending, but with a story like that, do I really need an ending?
No, I'm just going to live the rest of my life in the middle of that story.
What other podcast would feature a story like that?
I have a DeMond Wilson story.
Hey, he's got a DeMond Wilson
Celebrities
story.
Who carried guns.
Okay.
Well, not even that one. I mean, I directed a pilot with DeMond Wilson was...
Lamont.
Yeah, Sanford. No wonder he shot me.
And in The Odd Couple.
Right.
Lamont.
And the Black Odd Couple.
Anyway, I directed this pilot, and the producer, Lila Garrett, he carried a gun. It was, and she said, I understand that Lamont is carrying a gun on the set. He's got a gun with him. I said, yeah. She said, well, tell him not to do that. I said, no. The producer tells him not to do it. The director tells him how to hold it. But he was the worst guy in the world, wow. The luckiest human being ever. And they were doing a Dean Martin roast in Vegas. And there was a great old comedy writer, I mean, legend, Harry Crane.
Harry Crane.
The best. I mean, the worst human being on earth.
Melissa Gilbert's grandfather.
His grandfather. Yeah.
What?
It was Melissa Gilbert's grandfather.
Oh,
Right.
I thought you said it was Gilbert. Yeah. I would have told this anyway. Anyway.
Who was your grandfather?
Yeah. He was really funny. And now they have all these stars there, Sinatra and Bing Crosby and Bob Hope and everything, and Lamont Wilson comes down. They pick everybody up at the airport with limos and thing, and they all have suites. And Lamont is the only one complains. My room isn't good enough. My this isn't that. I want chips. I want
bigger gun.
He drove everybody crazy. And Harry said to him, "You're a big star, huh?" He said, "You bet your ass, Sam." He says, "Do you have?" pictures of you with a lot of famous people? I bet you do. He said, with everybody. He said, good, hold on to them and you can hang them on the wall of your car wash.
Great.
I had heard that DeMond Wilson became a preacher.
Yeah, that's the story.
He was like a Reverend Ike type, briefly. Yeah. And they gave it up.
Yeah. I got a couple of questions here, Gil,
through
social media from our listeners that I want to ask the boys if we have a...
As Gilbert swings with the...
As Gilbert swings.
Social media.
Paul, here's one for you.
He's uncouth.
Here's one for you, Paul. This is from Rob Smentek.
How do they know he's going to be on?
I told them. He wants to know, hip hugger or green onions?
Oh, well, green onions.
Green onions.
Yes, of course.
Okay.
That was the, you know, the one that broke Booker T and the MGs, and it's a magical little etude almost of R&B. That was absolutely magic. And Hip Hugger is great, too, but just a follow-up.
What is Hip Hugger? What was that? I don't remember that.
Here's Hip Hugger. Well, here's Green Onions.
Oh, yeah, of course. Every band in high school played that. Dory Sherry.
Dory Sherry.
Took a big steam in.
My hip story.
And then the other one is this.
Ice skating.
Put your hip huggers on. Right, that's it. I remember now.
Yep.
Paul.
Put your hip huggers on.
Just a...
That's the melody.
Just a little patience and prudence.
Put your hip huggers on and you took a baby leather on, right?
Something a little like patience and prudence. Gonna get along with that.
Yeah, I didn't go over the last time.
Well, you...
I'm gonna get along with that.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's great.
That one?
That's a good song.
My honey, I'm gonna get along without you now.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Nice, yeah. Paul.
That's one of my wife's favorite songs. So,
Kathy Bidas.
Kathy is here exactly. With us. Here's one for you, Tommy. This is from, wait a minute, I lost it. This is from William Bozarth.
William Bozarth?
Yes, he loves J. Edgar the Musical, which he wrote with Harry. Any plans to revive
it? William Bozarth the Jew hater?
William Bozarth the Jew hater.
Oh,
yes.
All right.
Do you have
I saw him at the meetings.
Any plans to revive J. Edgar the Musical?
Well, thank you. What's his name, William?
William.
Hey, William. Oh, thanks. Anyway.
Sounds very...
No, really. I do appreciate... What? Okay. Anyway, Harry Shearer and I wrote a musical, a fantasia on the life of J. Edgar Hoover called J. Edgar! And we had songs in there like Once Upon a Face, which he sings to Clyde Tolson, who he meets in the men's room of the Stork Club. He sings
Once
Upon
a Face.
It was in. This was before bags.
Oh, okay. Pre-bag.
Yeah, they used carpet bags in those days. Anyway, two eyes, two ears, a nose, two lips, something. Anyway, once upon a face. Anyway, so we did it as a radio thing on NPR in this big banquet room in a hotel just after the earthquakes. And so during the show, it was earthquake. And then we did it in the Aspen Comedy Festival. And then we kept thinking, you know, we wanted to get J. Edgar mounted, which he had been in life so often. And
John Goodman and Kelsey Grammer, right?
John Goodman, Kelsey Grammer, Chris Guest. You weren't in it, Paul, for some reason.
I couldn't make it.
Oh, yeah, you were invited.
You must have lost my invitation.
Yeah, that's what we did.
I wasn't. Okay,
and anyway, it was a show, but it didn't. I'd love to get it. We tried to get it on the stage a lot, London and in here, and, you know, it wasn't a movie first, I guess.
You need a producer.
Yeah. Are you a producer, William?
Yeah, maybe he's
is he a producer? I don't think he is. We'll check. This one is for Bierko from the lovely
Just put
Quinn's.
Put your own money into it.
I'm not. That's
put your own money into it.
Should I really?
I have the script. It's a great read.
Yeah.
Paul, this one's for you, Craig, from Quinn Sutherland. How often did your makeup become dislodged during fight scenes in Cinderella Man, and did you wear a prosthetic nose?
I did wear a tiny little piece of a prosthetic nose that they built. It took an hour to put on, and they couldn't find it. That's how thin and small it was, and I don't even know that it read on film.
It made you look more Jewish.
It made me look more Jewish, I suppose.
And they also painted
Which your
down.
Mother hated, I understand.
Yeah.
Say, oh, God, well, she just thinks they're a bunch of... Yeah. That's Bishop Sheen. She was born a Jew.
You were.
But Bishop Sheen did a gree-gree thing on her, and she's like,
"Oh,
you
my
know,
God.
Oh, you what? Know, a bunch of lizards." You see, it's like you put those glasses on from that movie. Like,
you were scary. You were scary in that film.
And, and what was the other question? Did my makeup come off?
Did your makeup come off during the fight scenes? Was it dislodged?
I don't remember wearing makeup.
You were great in that.
Well, thank you very much.
He was. Truly was.
That
was before I knew him, and I said, that is a hell of an actor.
Yeah, you want to know a true story?
What, everything else has been lies?
As opposed to the rest.
Jesus. What kind of hostility?
Well, I mean, you just made everybody full of shit here.
Warren, did you get fucked in that you have to come to me? Like,
no. Wait a minute, he's a legend. Don't
no,
talk.
I'm on another call. I'm not talking to Bill. I'm talking to my agent.
What was I telling? I don't remember. I was talking about
true
was
story. Story
about story.
Cinderella
true story
Man. About what?
This one's
Cinderella
true.
Cinderella Man.
About what?
Cinderella Man.
I don't remember.
The
what
truth.
Okay. It was a true story.
Don't even matter.
What the hell is that?
This you one. Had a follow up to Cinderella Man, Tom,
yes.
didn't you?
Yeah.
I did.
Cinderella Man?
Oh, I used to live Cinderella? Across from a Cinderella.
Oh, no, that's a different movie. A different movie, same cast.
I put you there, I call him the Cinderella Man.
Took place on 11th Street, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Here's one for Gilbert from Maurice Burstinsky. Can Gilbert please sing Hooray for Captain Spaulding?
Oh, yeah.
You have a little accompaniment?
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's the other people saying that. Yeah, but hooray for Captain Spaulding, the African explorer. Did someone call me Snora? Hooray, hooray, hooray. And there was another one.
Lady.
Wait, there was one that Groucho sang on the Dick Cavett
show. Oh, yeah.
That was the
where
tattooed lady.
He goes,
Easy peasy?
Tattooed lady.
No, that was Lydia.
Oh. Lydia.
But he had one.
Was it Peasy Weezy?
He sang Father's Day.
No. He sang...
Green Onions.
Yeah.
Hip Hugger.
Yeah, well, I sing like for...
Favorite shirts.
Captain yeah. Spaulding or Dr. So-and-so, and he
Captain
goes...
Captain Spaulding.
Yeah, and he goes...
Find out
Oh, for ailment subdominal, my charge is nominal. So it's grateful, there's a grateful tonsillectomy, poor and healthy, sick, poor and healthy, sick and healthy, poor and wealthy, come direct to me. Oh, God bless you, they yell, when I sent them home well, but they never... No, they never send a check to me.
Beautiful.
And right. then I think Margaret Dumont would sing, he's wonderful for curing things, for famine or for drought. You'll find his cure. You'll find his name is like his cure on everybody's mouth. He's never lost a case.
I've never lost a case. I've lost a lot of patients. But I've never lost a case.
That's old Groucho, right? With that Cavett show.
Frank.
Now, does anybody?
Sorry.
Go ahead, Drew.
I'm sorry for interrupting your interruption. Frank, can I just ask Gilbert?
We only interrupt during.
Can I ask Groucho a couple of questions,
please?
Yes. Okay.
Groucho, why did you kidnap the Lindbergh baby?
Because Chico needed the money.
Groucho. Why did you execute the Rosenbergs?
Because Chico needed some money.
Gotcha. Why did you chop off the heads of Nicole and Ron?
Because Chico
needs some money. Gotcha. Why did you do Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal podcast?
Because Chico needed some money.
Thank you.
Beautiful. All right, Drew, this one's for you.
Go ahead.
This is from Ghost. This is, I don't know, this is a name. Ghosty TMRS.
Yeah, Facebook friend.
Of all the six 60s Saturday morning versions of Laurel and Hardy, Abbott and Costello, and the Three Stooges, which do you find the most tolerable?
The what?
The animated versions.
You have another question? I don't like that question.
You don't like that question.
Come on, give me a
better one. I like the name, though, the woman who sent it in. Good name.
And were you or Gilbert fans of the short-lived cartoon Will the Real Jerry Lewis Please Sit Down, which was voiced by David Lander?
Well, I was a fan for that reason. He was 17 when he voiced that.
Yeah. Really?
It's like, actually, 1970. I can talk about that for an hour, but... That was actually like all Jerry was doing that year was that cartoon, even though he had nothing to do with it. It was like the Beatles cartoons, where the Beatles had nothing to do with them except they played their music. But no, I don't like the show. It was terrible. But, you know, David Lander was the voice of Jerry.
My father wrote that show.
I remember
with
the Beatles cartoon, the guys doing the voices didn't even bother to sound.
No. They're like old guys.
Yeah, they sounded like John Lennon sounded like Ronald Coleman. boys, we're going on an adventure.
Well, it sounded like they were hearing impaired. They didn't have accents.
It was that guy who used to do the Peter Lorre imitations back in the 40s for
everybody.
And he did the colossal beast voice.
Paul Frees.
It was Paul Frees did John Lennon.
Everything. Right.
He was like 75 when he did John Lennon on that. I think, the Beatles cartoon.
Now, Frankie,
you watch them.
Oh, was he in? Did he do the Rocky and Bullwinkle's Wrong?
No, that was Well, that was what's her face?
Name like Freeze.
Oh, Freeze. June
Foray and Bill.
Bill Foray.
And I heard Paul Freeze in Humphrey Bogart's last films. They like covered up the fact that Humphrey Bogart really sick, and Paul Frees was doing a Humphrey Bogart imitation.
Wow. Really?
In the film.
I heard Humphrey Bogart just move his mouth.
I think his voice was getting more and more slurred.
Yeah, he was dying of cancer. But I heard June Foray was a spinner. Had you ever heard that?
No.
Yeah.
What?
A spinner?
What is that?
Can anybody clarify?
Yes, yeah. I can't. If she was, I know what a spinner was.
Oh, okay.
She used to mount Dane Clark.
Alleged. They wind her up and she. Allegedly. This is what I've always heard.
Yeah. Now.
Can anybody.
Gil, can I ask a question?
Yes. Go ahead.
I haven't heard all the podcasts. I just heard my own, but. has Frankie ever told
I figured
the story?
As much.
Another Dane Clark story?
No. Has Frankie ever told the story about the girl you try to get a date with at the party?
Oh, that's a long story.
Oh, but it's great.
I'll tell that one a future show, I promise.
Oh,
we don't all have the boys here.
I know
it's a
Paul
great story.
Freeze was the voice of the Cyclops.
That's right.
With Lon Chaney Jr.
Burt Gordon loved him.
Oh, yes.
Yes, he was. And also the Amazing Colossal Beast, they brought him in to do the voice.
So he did Cyclops and Humphrey Bogart.
Right. And he did the narration for Manchurian Candidate.
Wow.
That's right. Here's one for Mr. Persky.
What?
From Joanne Rosado. Christopher Lee turns 93 this week. Can you tell us about working with him
on
Serial,
the
movie you
directed? Yes, he was terrific.
Oh, he
played the head of a gay motorcycle club. he did. He was a terrific guy. I enjoyed him a lot.
That was an amazing cast in that film.
It was a good movie. Yeah. It's known as... as a cult film.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great cast.
I think the Scientologists watch it.
What was he like, Christopher Lee?
He was great. He was just nothing like you would expect him to be like. You know, he was not arch and he was just a guy.
Who just left the room, worked with Christopher Lee on SNL one time, I think.
That's right.
Yeah. Lorraine
Newman demanded Christopher Lee be the guest, you know, because she was a horror film fan. So they finally, you know, gave in to her. And hired him. He was great.
Here's one for Drew.
Wait.
Go ahead.
Christopher Lee. I once heard a tape of him because he served in World War II.
Yeah.
And there was, during a movie, there was one scene where somebody gets stabbed and the actor does a reaction, like the guy who's getting stabbed. And Christopher Lee gets up and he goes, no. When you get stabbed, it's the release of air that you hear. You don't hear it breathing in. It's more like... Mm-hmm. And he directs, so obviously he had at least stabbed one person during the war, which I found fascinating.
Yeah.
Did
he stab anybody when you worked with him?
No.
How about
Martin Mull
when
came
you're in
close.
A movie?
Bill Macy stabbed
The director comes up to the actor and gives the direction. That's what I would say. And the director releases the direction.
Yes.
Well, Ronnie Howard
Sit
had
down,
been
you
an actor.
You're right. You're so right, man.
Lon Chaney Jr. hasn't come up once so far. And I'm shocked.
We're going to correct that.
I'm shocked.
Was he on the show?
What?
Was he on the show with you? Lon Chaney
Jr.?
I wish.
God.
He's Gilbert's favorite actor.
Oh, is that right?
Is Lon Chaney Jr.
Why is he your favorite actor?
I don't know. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, those movies first started coming back on TV, all the Universal. Mm. And so I saw like the Wolfman and all those. And of course, of Mice and Men, I thought he was great in.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
I remember the Wolfman, but the only thing I remember was how sad he was that this was going to happen.
Yeah,
he was sad.
What do you expect?
He always had that sad face. He didn't want to be.
No, I didn't expect him to play happy or. You know,
he didn't
want to
be a monster. He never wanted to be a monster. I mean, you could see it in his face. Yeah, yeah. He fought against it. He wasn't a happy.
He was
monster.
A good actor.
He wasn't a happy monster.
Communicate.
Yeah, you communicate.
He was tortured. He was a tortured monster.
I remember, and this was what drives me crazy with writers who write about movies and where they don't know. And so they wrote a review of the Benicio del Toro Wolfman movie. And they said it would have been better if he played someone who didn't want to be the Wolfman. Mm. And they said, you know, like Bill Bixby.
We didn't want to be father.
My fortune of Betty's father.
Well, how about like the Wolfman? Yeah. How about like Lon Chaney in the Wolfman?
Yeah. Yeah. Not like that. He didn't want to be.
Yeah.
Is that, was that it with that move? I didn't see the newer one. He's like into it?
Is he?
Makes sense.
Full moon. Enjoy more nights. So, hey,
I can't wait for my hands to get free.
He's like he's like Max Barry. Enjoyed the punishing.
In the werewolf
punishing
movies, the guy will always complain, you know, I turn into a wolf whenever the moon is full. And you figure, well, that means you turn into a wolf like three times a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so bad. Somehow, three more times than I do.
Somehow in Hollywood, there was a full moon every night.
Do you remember the poem that goes with it?
Even a man who is pure at heart and says his prayers by night can become a wolf when the wolfbane blooms and the autumn moon is bright.
That's a Maria Askenspire poem.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they changed it in the later
movies. Oh, in The Ghost of Frankenstein, they changed
it. When the moon is full and bright.
That's right. I noticed that too.
Autumn all the time.
It was a different poem.
They did. Is that why?
In the royal bathroom filled with royal gas sits the royal queen scrubbing her royal crown. Nipsey Russell.
We never talk about Nipsey Russell.
No, he hasn't come up enough.
We don't bring Nipsey up.
He was great
enough.
In Car 54. He was subdued.
These new cutout fashions cause me to wonder in doubt. Are they outside trying to get in or inside trying to get out?
And how about how he cut off the sleeves? He would cut off his long sleeve shirts mid-arm, below the elbow. What was that all about?
That was Nipsey. That was Nipsey.
It was a good look.
Nipsey.
It was a good look.
Nipsey.
He was the poet laureate.
Children today are different, as you already know. They used to ask where they came from. Now they tell you where to go.
Nipsey. Nice.
He was
according to Dan Cupid's plan, there is a girl for every man. I'm here to say if this is true, some guy's shacking up with two.
God bless him.
He was the Robert Frost of Harlem.
He really was.
Yes, he was. Match game 73.
That was the good year.
We all are brothers under the skin. Of this there is no doubt. Then go back under the skin, she said, and send your brother out.
Wonderful.
Beautiful. Paul, here's one for you, again from our pal Jonathan Sloman. Did you have anything to do with the takeoff on Telstar in Mr. Mike's Mondo Video?
Yes. I arranged the... I scored Mondo Video, and Telstar was a number that Mr. Mike... got the rights to, and we did it. It wasn't so much a takeoff as we just used the number.
Right. Weren't there lyrics written for it?
Yes. Yeah. Somebody sang it. Julius LaRosa came in.
Julius LaRosa.
Wow, what a coup.
Wow.
And sang the haunting theme from Telstar. That I think Michael wrote the lyrics. Magic star above, and sign of your love. And then we did another version of it when the Cats were... They were throwing cats in the swimming pool. Right. That was a whole, like, in slow motion. And we played Telstar in the back.
Nice.
Hey, talk about how we worked with Gene Pitney. This is one of the greatest things of my life, because Gene Pitney was my favorite singer when I was a
town
kid.
Town Without Pity.
Town Without Pity, Liberty Valance.
Sure, Meryl shot Liberty Valance.
We did a takeoff
half
of...
Half heartache, half heaven.
We did a takeoff of Town Without Pity for the theme... to Viva Shape Vegas, which was my Cinemax special that Tom and Harry and I wrote together.
Hard to find, but it's a must
come
watch.
Back.
You can track it down.
Collector's item.
Yeah, it is. It's great.
And Tom wrote most of the lyrics to the opening, Viva Shape Vegas, where do you run to? Where are you running to? Viva Shape Vegas. And we said, let's get the real Gene Pitney, and we did. We brought him in. And so what else?
Well, my favorite thing was, first of all, I had known you so long, but I said, well, he's telling Gene Pitney what to do. And that was so amazing to me. Like, It was great. I mean, and
that he looked like Gene Pitney.
Yeah, but you kept saying to him, more Gene Pitney. Oh. Remember, you could say more Gene Pitney because he wasn't Pitneying up enough for you.
He wasn't really. He didn't kill it.
No.
Maybe it was in the wrong key. And that's why I kept saying more Gene Pitney. And he was saying, this is my meat. I can't understand. Why can't I get this? So, we got something pretty
good. That was a big thrill
good.
In the show biz.
Yeah, boy, those are too great. Yeah, when Liberty Valance came to town, the women would run and hide.
Helene Liberty.
When Liberty Valance came to town, the men would step aside. 'Cause the point of a gun was the only law that Liberty understood. When it came to shooting straight and fast, he was my good. 'Cause the man who shot Liberty Valance, he shot Liberty Valance. He was the bravest of them all.
Beautiful. Hey, Paul, who wrote that song?
Dmitri Tiomkin.
Oh, I thought Burt Bacharach did.
No, he wrote a later song for him.
Wow.
Oh, for Pitney. And
Half Heartache, I think.
Wait a minute.
Dmitri Tiomkin wrote Town Without Pity.
That's right.
That's right.
So you're right. Yeah. Bacharach did write Liberty Valance. You are absolutely right.
When we stop to gaze upon a star. When we stop to gaze upon a star, people talk about how bad we are. How can we keep love alive? How can anything survive when these little minds tear us in two? What a town without pity can do.
Oh, boy. I like your version better. I like that. Do you remember I remember seeing the coming attractions for Town Without Pity, and I was just a little kid. I don't know, whenever it was out.
You're giving away your age.
Yeah, I can't give away my age. Anyway. but the coming attraction, what the movie was about, was these soldiers had their way with a gorgeous young German girl while they're serving overseas. And I remember the coming...
Suddenly you say had their way with
I don't
you?
Yeah.
What happened? Did
show?
I doze and you became a...
Really?
Had
happened?
Their way?
Frank Gorshin's taking a shit on George Kirby 10 minutes ago.
And you think
had their way with.
All right, touche.
Jesus.
Speaking of music and songwriting, I think we should just acknowledge that Billy wrote a song that
famous.
Was famously recorded by Phil Foster.
Yes,
Billy,
let's keep the Dodgers in Brooklyn.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Wow, I wish I knew that one.
You didn't know? Do I remember?
Can we hear a second of it?
Let's keep the Dodgers in Brooklyn.
Did you hear the news about what's happening
Fabulous.
In Brooklyn? We really got the blues about what's happening
yeah.
in Brooklyn. It ain't official yet. We hope official it don't get. But beware, my friend, and let me warn you. They're thinking of taking the bums to California.
Let's keep the Dodgers in Brooklyn. A house is not a home without some love. Don't let them leave our premises. L.A. would be their nemesis. 'Cause Brooklyn fits the Dodgers like a glove.
Mr. Walter O'Malley,
we always called you Pally. We stuck with you through thick and thin.
But if you take away our Dodgers, guys like Luke and Hodges,
we ain't no pal no more the way we've been. Let's keep the Dodgers in Brooklyn.
That's
my house is not a home without some love. Don't let them leave.
I like the next verse.
LA would be their nemesis,
'cause Brooklyn fits the Dodgers like a glove.
We offer our bridges.
You could take them widges. I love that.
But we all feel so glum
without the Duke and Gilliam.
We need one left to jump off in despair. Really, what would Brooklyn be without the Dodgers? Well, Brooklyn would be like a pair of socks that's holy without Jackson and Simoli. Like a bed without a pillar, without Erskine and Perilla. Like a ship without a harbor, without Padres and the barber. Like the sun without its shine, without Zimmer and Levine. Like the birds without a bee, without Alston and Pee Wee. And here I am, a poet,
and I didn't even know it.
So send the Phils to Trenton, the Giants to St. Paul, but keep the bums in Brooklyn, the greatest ball of all. So let's keep the Dodgers in Brooklyn.
Actually, Sam and I are singing in the background.
It's you and Sam in the background?
In the background.
Phil Foster.
Keep the Dodgers in Brooklyn, USA. We really love them. Keep the Dodgers in Brooklyn, O'Malley.
Do me one favor. Mind your own business and stay home. Don't leave town.
Oh, my God.
That was really a big song at the time.
Oh, that's great.
Made 11 cents. I
great.
No,
and it's
God.
Great that it really worked.
You should have just. What, yeah, I can't believe offensive. You went on to do even greater things. Yeah.
Now, Phil Foster and that whole group of guys, those comedians,
Catskill
back
guys,
in those,
yeah.
The Catskill guys, there was nothing like those guys. They were so funny. They used to all get in one guy's car and drive up to the Catskills. It was just an amazing time, and they were funny.
Did you see Jerry Lewis perform
yes.
up in the Catskills?
Yes.
He saw him when the night, the second night after 500
I was the, Club. In Atlantic City. I lived in Atlantic City, and they
so when he
did
teamed
the
up with
500
Dean.
Club.
Wow.
You lived
everybody
in
said, Jesus, these guys, and so we went to the 500 Club and saw them the second
Wait,
night they ever
were. What
were
you doing living in Atlantic City?
Huh?
You lived in Atlantic
oh,
City?
Oh, God, the best place in the world
Tell
to grow
me,
up.
Tell about your dad.
Before the...
Oh, you grew
before,
up there.
Shepherding
yeah.
the career of Johnny Casanova.
No, yes. Yes. You know about Johnny Casanova.
Are you kidding? I'm buying the right.
Atlantic City, before gambling, was the most fabulous place you can
oh,
imagine.
My God.
Oh, it was just great. I lived on the boardwalk. My father owned an auction gallery right across from Steel Pier. We all used to ride our bikes to school on the boardwalk. Oh, it was great. And my whole childhood now, 30 square blocks, is a parking lot. I went down there to look. It's gone. There's nothing but buses coming in. They're driving over my childish body.
Ah.
Oh, Atlantic City was great. When the gambling first came in, it was like hotels came down like from nowhere, and there were people's legs hanging out from under them. It was they put them any place that there was a building, and they built inside of it so that they could get the gambling up fast enough. They didn't build new hotels. They just took over things.
There was always gambling up at Skinny D'Amato's upstairs over the club.
Yeah,
right?
Well, yeah. And
Skinny D'Amato never looked very skinny.
The 500, no.
Yeah, it wasn't no. skinny.
That's no.
a lot
of ironic. I think it was ironic.
I saw a lot of photos of me. You never looked skinny.
Yeah,
good I point. Always wondered about that.
Yeah. Oh, God, it was a great place.
Wow. Here's Is this a six-hour of the show?
Here's a couple of last quick ones, and we'll wrap it
How
up.
How long have we been doing this for crying out?
I'm telling you.
I lost the suit size.
Can we just find out who's the president? I want to find out
who's
the president.
President now.
What, Rich, from Rich Brown, Craig, will you be in the Three Stooges sequel? And did you love working with Dabney Coleman?
I loved working with Dabney Coleman, who is one of the great, funny, bad guys. I think he's just, I think he was an is an impeccable comic actor. He's one of those guys who we were talking about who they do something so well that nobody else could do it. I remember there was one joke that was the first. Remember a show called Buffalo Bill?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
The first joke. Great. It was the greatest on-character joke, and it was the very first joke. Someone comes in, and he's doing his makeup. He's getting ready to do this. He plays a small-town talk show host in Buffalo. And someone comes in and goes, "Hey, Frank Robinson is." He goes, "Frank Robinson." Jeez, let me make sure I remember it. He goes, "Frank Robinson just died," and he turns around and Dabney Coleman goes, "Oh my God, you're kidding me, Frank Robinson? Oh my God, oh my God." He goes, "He's he went in his sleep. It was painless. And he goes, oh, he died. I thought you said he was here.
Could you imagine if the Hitler story went over like that? Had you not steamrolled through that?
Hey, Craig, someone said to ask you, someone tweeted me, did you fuck Gina Davis?
Good question.
It is a good question.
I don't know.
Oh, did you fuck Gina Davis?
Yeah, the 80s were weird.
How about Ozzy Davis?
What about the Three Stooges movie? The Three Stooges sequel. You gotta...
I seriously doubt I would be.
Don't mind me sitting next to you.
No, I know your feeling. You know I told you. I know. It took me a month...
Craig got the part in the Three Stooges movie.
And it took me a month to call him and tell him that I was doing the Three Stooges movie.
Right. I said, it's okay. Work is work. It's okay by me. It's fine.
If my character somehow became Shemp, I would do it and to honor. Yeah,
I think Linda Hunt should play perfect Shemp.
I doubt that. I think what I heard is that they're going to do because this time they'd like people to come and see the movie. They figured the formula was interesting last time, but what if we get people in a theater facing the screen? What if we do that? And then they're going to go, maybe it'd be a different experience. So they're going to have I think they're going to get a big action star. So who knows? Maybe
Dwayne
Charlton
the Rock
Heston,
Johnson as
Joe
Shemp.
Namath. What?
Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
Right. Who's going to be Curly Joe DeRita?
I don't know. I don't know if they're going to go into the deep cuts.
Are they going to bring back Larry David as the nun? That was everybody loved that part.
They were talking originally. I heard that the movie was going to be Benicio del Toro as Mo, Sean Penn as Larry, and Jim Carrey.
I can tell you even insider information. When I was doing Cinderella Man, they flew to Australia to speak to Russell about being Mo. I can't even imagine, but can you imagine? Wow. Like the world's Mo. He's Mo Howard to the world.
Wow.
And they were there for the weekend, and he was talking to him.
Oh, seriously.
Hold on a second. Paul's penis is yelling.
Paul just made $5 of his own money.
I told him not to call
you. Every Greg Bierko story has to be
What is that? There's no way to...
I'm sorry.
It's amazing.
Craig,
amazing. Finally get a great story out,
Craig,
and I'll
I'm
get...
sorry.
Oh, he had 30-second cancer.
Yeah.
I'll die of 30-second cancer. It's the only case ever.
Well, Gilbert...
Whether I interrupt or music,
it doesn't matter. Who was it? Is everybody all right?
No, I don't know.
I found you right.
I made 47 cents.
Now, I want to know, did Russell Crowe know that these guys were coming to pitch him the part of Mo?
Yeah.
Did he get there and go,
I heard the story. I heard the story from one of the people who they were. There was a whole group of people that they were going after one time. And this was while we were shooting Cinderella Man, which would have been 2005, I guess. Paul Giamatti, they wanted to do Larry. They wanted. Just imagine Russell in that goddamn wig.
Do you think he has
the idea of it? even that, with an egg beater over a body and with the hospital scrubs.
Knew who Mo was?
I doubt it. I don't think it was his thing.
Well, I guess he was flattered, but can you imagine?
I don't think he was flattered.
I think the Three Stooges' biggest fan is Mel Gibson, and he's also the biggest Jew hater that exists.
Yeah, we left him out earlier.
Way to bring it back.
He loves the Three Stooges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never got the Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey's endlessly talented, but he's a big, tall, thin man and curl. I never understood how they were going to do that. But,
hey, do you know whose father was a Nazi? Who's that actor on the political
Arnold Schwarzenegger's
show? No,
father was a Nazi.
The guy who was in Beauty. The guy who's on. What's that political show, honey? In the booth?
What political
Bill Maher.
Show?
No.
The political.
You know, the one where John he plays Stewart. The president. Mm.
With the what?
On HBO, he plays the president. What's the guy? He played Bobby Darin in a movie.
Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
His father was a Nazi.
Well, it was a big story that came out like a couple of months ago.
I like it.
You didn't read this? I can't believe you.
We're breaking
his
news.
Father was a Nazi? What have you been doing? What have you been so busy to know
Kevin
this?
Spacey's
I'm going to spread it.
Father was
if
a
you
Nazi?
Look it up right
but
now.
That would have been like a Nazi in like six in the 60s. Like a hippie Nazi.
But
hippie
he would
Nazi.
Dress up. His father would dress up like
Nazi.
Adolf Hitler.
Like George Lincoln.
Every night.
Nice.
Every night. He would dress up like
strut
Hitler.
Around like
well,
Hitler?
Yeah.
Was he a vegetarian?
At
least he was home with his kids.
They found photos of Arnold Schwarzenegger's father.
Oh, he really was a Nazi.
Yeah, he was a higher up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
And he was a wannabe Nazi.
Yeah.
And this guy's fine.
Well, which is fun to say.
Oh, so yes. I have to start wrapping up the show.
Oh, my God.
Are you kidding? Lord brought up Milton Berle.
That's
thing.
Only finally. Been 2 hours.
Okay.
Wait a minute. I want to
it's
ask Tom.
It's a marathon.
Tom, did you paint Paul Benedict's house?
Yes.
All right. That's all I wanted to know.
Okay.
Thank you.
What color?
And he had acromegaly.
What color?
I don't remember the color. I do remember it was June.
He did have acromegaly like Ron DeWine.
Yes, he was the guy from the Jeffersons. I heard he was in a play.
Yes. True story. He told me that story.
Yeah. A doctor said to him, could you come back? I want to meet you backstage. And he thought he wanted an autograph. And the doctor said, I think you may have acromegaly.
Yeah. The Rondo Hatton disease.
Yeah.
I said the same thing to Judy Carn. After
was this after Burt Reynolds beat her up with the...
Yeah. 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 But he had that, and that's why he couldn't paint his own house. Somehow you can't paint your own house. That's the disease.
You can't paint your own house.
More than like 800 million people get it.
See, they're telling me to wrap up.
We're just getting started.
Nutmeg Post with our engineer, Frank Verderosa.
How did you get him? Thank you, Nutmeg.
This has been Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast.
Can we go out with a song?
With my co-host, Frank Santopadre. We've had on... And
the dirt that the bottom of the totem pole is dug into.
The bottom of the barrel will start and then build from then. So, of course, the very bottom of the barrel, Craig Bierko.
Yes. Thank you, Craig.
Yes.
Yeah. It's the bottom of the barrel.
That's the bottom.
General music. Just general music.
Drew Friedman.
Drew. Woo! Drew, you have a new book that you're working on.
It's okay.
No,
what is the new book? I forget.
All right.
I forget.
So much for the plug.
How could you forget your own book?
We should say Drew Friedman is the defender of the classics.
Yeah.
Yes.
He really is.
He really is.
He's a purist.
Tom Leopold.
What are you yelling?
You need a launch, Drew.
Bill Persky.
Hey, Bill.
The old timer.
The legend. Comedy legend.
The old timer.
And, of course, on organ, Paul Schaefer.
Thank you. What a cast we've had today.
And since this has been a year, I just want to say that a lot of people go into the making of this podcast. We want to thank them really quickly. Rodney Swearingen, Sean Marrick, Heather Cooney, Maria Spertolozzi, Eddie Marino, Glenn Schwartz, Stuart Hirsch, Andrew Steven, Wade Snook, Mike McPadden, our social media director, Darren Foster, and, of course, the lovely Dara Gottfried. We could not do a show without her. It would just be Gilbert and I on the F train asking people about Bill Bixby.
And how about Joe Franklin?
We want to say something. And yes, Joe Franklin.
Your only guest who has passed away.
God bless you, Joe.
Oh, he's the only one? I don't feel so good myself.
I'll tell you, if this runs any longer, I'm going to be the second one.
It's beautiful. Thank you, guys. It was a treat.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.
A few days ago, Brooke Tudine posted an inspirational quote on her wall that got 17 likes and 3 comments. Thumbs up, Brooke. Geico also wants to make a comment. In just 15 minutes, you could save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance by switching to Geico. And nothing says inspiration better than saving money. Well, except for those posters that say things like teamwork, excellence, and make it happen. Hashtag keep climbing. #savings.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.